Hello and welcome to Gilmore Ball Z, the podcast where I show my wife Dragon Ball Z, she shows me Gilmore Girls, and we both try to find some kind of common ground. I'm Grant.
And I'm Paige.
And this week we watched episode 63 of Dragon Ball Z Kai, and season 3, episode 10 of Gilmore Girls. So Paige, why don't you start us off? What happened this week on Dragon Ball Z Kai?
So this week, as you'll remember, it starts with Vegeta looking for Android...
20.
Sure, Funny Hat. Android Funny Hat, who's running off to a secret lab to release Androids 17 and 18. Trunks swoops in to save Bulma and Lil Trunks, and Vegeta proves he is the best dad in the universe by asking why anyone would save them because they're weaklings. That is the woman you impregnated, Vegeta, and the baby you impregnated her with. Bulma remembers looking at this android in scientific papers. This is actually, you know, and specifically in the bio pictures. Android 20, Android Funny Hat, is actually Dr. Gero, the doctor who made these androids. Vegeta doesn't believe this for some reason. I don't know, because he's fed up with Bulma, because he thinks she's an idiot, because sexism, because Vegeta always needs to be right. I don't know. He has no basis of this. But he runs off to try to find the androids so he can fight them, because this wasn't enough fight for him, and because he has true Saiyan blood TM. He needs to find a bigger fight, even if it means destroying the entire world. This would, in most shows, make him the villain, but in Dragon Ball Z, this makes him a main protagonist.
And most people's favorite.
And don't get me wrong, I love me some Vegeta, but... oh, Vegeta. Meanwhile, Vegeta yells at Trunks... Trunks is putting the pieces together of what actually happened, that he's changed the timeline, that the androids he thought were the problem weren't actually the problem, that's why Dr. Gero hasn't been killed by his own creations yet, this is why the timeline is different, and Vegeta just yells at Trunks and calls him an idiot. In this process, Bulma and Vegeta and everyone else learns that Trunks is the same as Trunks, which in this case means that Big Trunks is the same as Bulma's kid, Little Trunks. Time travel shenanigans are going on. Thankfully, this is revealed before Bulma gets too attached to Calvin Klein. She doesn't do the Back to the Future thing where she falls in love with a kid, which is convenient because she's fallen in love with every other eligible bachelor on the show. Meanwhile, they ask Trunks, now that this is all revealed, what the androids look like in the future, because that'll make it easier for them to look. And he mentions that one is a man with longer hair and a scarf around his neck. The other one is a woman with shoulder-length hair. I know this is because of how our genders cut hair, but one is a man with long hair and one is a woman with shoulder-length hair. Like, can't he just say, that's the same length of hair as you have, Trunks? Anyway.
No, Trunks has still got,
he's still short. He's got the Dean cut.
He's got the page boy thing going on. Later, Trunks will have long hair. But yeah. At the moment, he still has the bowl cut.
That's true. So... Krillin's first response to this is, a girl? I wasn't expecting that. Now, Krillin, I've got a story about a doctor that'll blow your mind. But Vegeta's an idiot, and he's like, well, I can turn into a Super Saiyan, and I need a fight. And Trunks very hastily and correctly points out that he was a Super Saiyan when he was fighting these androids. Like, Vegeta was a Super Saiyan, or actually, no, Vegeta. But he was a Super Saiyan when he was fighting these androids, and that wasn't enough, so it won't be enough. He runs off to chase Vegeta and try to stop him. Meanwhile, all the other Z fighters who are there are about to find Gero, but Bulma points out she needs to deliver a message to Goku, but she can't leave. Her flying car has been destroyed. So Gohan is stuck flying Bulma, Trunks, like baby Trunks, but Trunks, and Yajirobe, who's weighing the whole operation down, back as quickly as he can. So poor little Gohan is, like, much like the episode of Gilmore Girls that we're going to be talking about later, like, Gohan is stuck in, like, a squabble he has no fight in, but also for some reason has to be the mature one, even though everyone in the situation is older than him. Really, there's no reason for him not to just drop Yajirobe, but he's a polite kid, and he's not been told that he gets to say no yet.
Yeah, Gohan's definitely taking a page out of the Rory Gilmore playbook in this episode. It's like,
everything is fine.
Yeah, like, you're not going to make Gohan do that. And Gohan's like, oh no, it's no problem. I don't mind. I can do it. Because he just wants people to not fight.
Yep. We see a short flashback when Trunks is chasing Vegeta, where basically Bulma tells him, "Your father probably went to hell, but he loves you."
I love that. Your father was no angel, and he's probably not flying with them right now, if you catch my drift. And this is a younger version of future Trunks.
Yeah, this is like a 10-year-old Trunks.
Yeah, he's probably like 10. And so it's like, oh, telling your 10-year-old kid that his dad is probably in hell. Sorry, in the home for infinite losers.
Yes. And so this is going through his mind, because this is the first time Trunks has dealt with his dad, and he's trying to figure out who his dad is while his dad is diving headlong into the stupidest situation he can.
Sorry, kid, your dad's a jerk.
And an idiot, but probably the smartest guy here. And so,
Piccolo's the smartest guy here.
That's true, but, I mean, sometimes Vegeta has more tactical sense.
It's true.
So anyway, meanwhile, Krillin, Piccolo, and Tien are trying to find the secret lab of Dr. Gerou to try to disable androids 17 and 18 before Vegeta turns them on to just get the fight of his life. Krillin finds Dr. Gerou and almost gets murdered by him, but Piccolo's coming by and Gerou doesn't want to waste time beating up Krillin and Piccolo, which, fair.
Krillin's not even worth killing.
Krillin's not worth killing. And so that's really, that doesn't end up being anything. Like, Gerou just leaves, and Krillin decides not to call anyone to tell them where Gerou is, because they need to find the lab anyway. That's a higher priority. Let's see.
That's pretty much it.
Yep.
There was some bickering between, Gerobi and Bulma.
Well, and meanwhile, we get a couple flashbacks to, Goku Tank Watch 2019. When is this episode going up? actually, it's really Goku Bed Watch 2019, where he has taken the heart medication and everyone's just kind of like, Chi-Chi and Yamcha are standing around wondering when he's gonna get better and get back up and if he's gonna get back up. Well, meanwhile, Goku is hallucinating fighting the heart virus while he's while the medicine is working.
Mm-hmm.
Because only in the Dragon Ball universe is medicine just a tool for your psychic mindscape fight with a virus.
Yeah. This is definitely, there's a stretch of time that you'll see. It's going to go on for a little bit. I'm curious exactly how long it'll be with Kai cutting things. But there's a pretty serious stretch of the series here where Goku's role in the show is just to lay in a bed and scream.
Yeah.
For at least a little bit. So that's, I guess it is Goku Bedwatch. It probably will be 2019 by the time this episode drops.
Yeah, and even if it's 2018, we all know it's basically 2019 anyway.
It's true.
Grant, what happened this week on Gilmore Girls?
Okay, so this week on Gilmore Girls, we had a good old-fashioned Lorelai plot and a Rory plot. Although, really, it was more of, an Emily plot and a Jess and Dean plot. It's Richard's birthday.
Yay! He's 60.
He's turning 60. And so the Gilmore Girls gotta come together and get good presents for him and have a party, and it'll be a great time. And so the plot really kicks off. There's a little bit of comedy of Lorelai's bad at picking gifts for Richard, whatever. The plot really kicks off when they're at his birthday party, and it's just the family, and they're giving Richard all these nice gifts, and they all end up getting Richard really nice things. Like, Emily got him a cigar humidor that used to be owned by, somebody in World War I.
An officer.
Yeah, an officer in World War I, and Lorelai got him some book, a history book that he really wanted, and Rory got him, a record of Chuck Berry. So Richard's having a great birthday, everyone's getting along, and so we're all sitting there okay, now who's gonna poop in the Jell-O? And I gotta say,
you were not expecting
it. I was not expecting it. It's like, they're all sitting around the Jell-O, and we're all having a nice time, you're like, who's gonna poop? Who's gonna poop? But everyone's keeping their pants on, and then suddenly a helicopter flies overhead. Right? And just, airdrops in poop, because guess who shows up? Richard's mother.
Lorelai Gilmore!
Lorelai Gilmore!
Who's gonna poop in the Jell-O? It's gonna be Lorelai, but which one? You weren't expecting Lorelai 3.
Yeah, so Richard's mother shows up out of nowhere, poops all over that Jell-O. She's just doing the usual condescending thing, where she's being mean to Emily, and, just generally being kind of rude, and showed up unannounced, and we find out that she was in town because her house that she owned in Hartford, she'd been renting it out to a rock and roll band. I think they're called Korn. So Korn had been living in her house, and they were moving out, so she was just going to go check up on the place and get it ready for a new tenant. And she figured, well, it coincides. I can come see my son for his birthday. Isn't that nice? And she says, Lorelai, I'd love to see where you work. Why don't we have dinner at the inn, whatever night? And Lorelai says, okay, fine. And she talks to Suki, and Suki puts together this beautiful meal and just goes way over the top for it, because it's this huge event. And Rory can't go to the dinner because of reasons that I'll get to when we get to the Rory plot, but, you know, so it's going to be three generations of Gilmore women and Richard all sitting around having a nice meal, and Emily, of course, is freaking out. I have to say, this is another just watch Kelly Bishop moment of when there's a knock at the door and the maid lets Trix in, and you hear her voice, and Emily just stands up and just stares at the camera. And you can just see just the horror in her face. And so she's freaking out. She's insisting, you know, Lorelai, you need to get your house ready. She's going to want to see your house. If she sees this, it's going to be my fault, because everything's my fault and this is horrible. And
you have a tacky dancing rabbi, yeah, and a Betty Boop head vase.
Yeah. And so, you know, Emily's losing her shit like she does whenever Richard's mother is in town. And Lorelai sits her down on the couch and says, okay, here's a trick that you need to understand. You know, there's a lot of things that Gran disapproves of in your life, just like there's a lot of things in my life that you disapprove of. And when you disapprove of those things, I choose to find it amusing and to laugh about it. So Emily's like, wait, you think my disapproval is funny? She says, oh, your disapproval is hilarious. And so Lorelai teaches, you know, this is how I cope when we don't get along. You need to do the same thing with Richard's mother. And so they go to dinner, and she's being her usual uppity self of like, oh, I need the courses to come out at exactly these times, and you know, just being, you know, a demanding customer to Michelle, and Michelle is obviously disgruntled. They're talking and they're eating, and the food is delicious and everything's great. And then I think it's Lorelai asks, like, so have you figured out a new tenant for your house now that Corin's left? And Trick says, you know what, I'm gonna move in, because my health hasn't been doing so great these last few years. And to be fair, she's probably pretty darn old if Richard is 60.
Yeah.
Right? You know, so my health hasn't been doing great these last few years, and the weather in London isn't really agreeing with me, and I want to be closer to my family, so I think I'm going to move in and live in Hartford. And Emily's horrified by this, and Richard, of course, just says, oh,
that's delightful.
That's delightful, and how dare you tell me you're not doing well? We'll make sure you see all the best doctors, and Emily and I can take care of you day and night. And and Emily is just horrified at this notion, and then finally it all clicks into place for her. And she says, you know what? I'm not ready for the next course. I'm not done yet.
Well, and Trix had said specifically, do not clear the plates until everyone is done.
Yes, and so she's breaking this little internal logic in Trix's mind and just slowly eats her green beans one bite at a time. And she realizes that her life is going to change pretty drastically soon and in a way that she's not going to enjoy. But she can at least have this. And so in that way, Emily gets this small victory over Trix. And that's basically the end of the Lorelai plot, right? Lorelai doesn't actually do much, and it's more of an Emily plot. So Rory plot, she keeps bumping into Dean just around town. Like, Dean shows up at her house to just give back some of her stuff, like you do after a breakup. But they also bump into each other just, like, at a store, on the street and everything. And finally, Dean says, like, let's just get coffee. And Rory says, okay, yeah. And they sit down and they get coffee. And Dean basically says, you know, it's a small town. We're going to run into each other. And I miss talking to you. Can't we be friends?
Well, and he tells her, like, he's applied to college.
Yeah,
are things he wanted to talk to her about.
Yeah, he's applying to a four-year school when he was so convinced he was going to do community college before. And he specifically tells her, like, you know, I saw how much you were doing and how much you were achieving and how much you believed in me. And I guess it got through to me. And I realized I can't apply to a four-year school. And I think he said he got accepted, too.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to, like, a four-year school, which seemed out of the question for him. And, yeah, he's doing real well. And so, you know, it seems like he's really turning around. And he wants to be friends with Rory because he misses being able to tell her these things. And he misses their friendship, even though, you know, they can't be together anymore. And he respects that she's with Jess and everything. And this all seems really nice and wholesome, except you have the context of the end of last episode when he basically, like, cornered Jess in an alley and was like, I got my eye on you, boy. So it seems perfectly innocent, like, oh, Dean's actually learning from this experience, but in the greater context, like, Dean, you motherfucker, like, you can just see how the smile is not genuine, right?
And even at this point, you could believe it's genuine, that he's had some time, that he knows he's going to school, maybe he's changing, but we see some things later in the episode that cast a different light on it.
Yeah, but even before that, I was like, Dean, you motherfucker, just because I remembered the last time we saw him. So at the same time, there's this winter carnival that I guess the high school puts on every year, and Rory wants to go, but Jess doesn't want to go because he's too cool for that, because he's Jess. And she keeps sort of pressuring him to go, but he's not budging. He's like, no, it's dumb, I don't want to go.
And he gives her the reasoning, which, you know, from a crappy high schooler perspective, is genuine. Like, she's asking him, like, you went to stupid town things. You went to the dance marathon, and you went to, like, the bit of basket, and he was like, yeah, to get you. I got you. Now I don't have to go to stupid town things anymore.
You know, he's not wrong. although he is wrong, because he should understand that if Rory's going to those things, being Rory's boyfriend means going to those things. Yeah. But he's still, you know, I can see his point of view, even though I don't agree with it. So
you've not wanted to go to things.
Oh, I've definitely not wanted to go to things. But I understand that being married to you means sometimes going to things I don't want to go to. And I usually have a good time anyway, because I like spending time with you.
Ew, gross. Get it off the mics.
And you're prettier than Lauren Graham.
Ew, no. Stop lying. Get off the mics.
Anyway.
Cut this!
She's finally trying to pressure him into it, and he's still saying no. And then Dean shows up with Clara, his little sister. And she's like, oh, Rory, hey... You know, and they obviously haven't seen each other in a long time, and apparently they got along real well, even though we hardly ever saw her. And so, you know, she's like, you know, oh, who's this? And Jess is like, why does it matter? And Jess is just, like, getting in a feud with a probably 10-year-old, right? Which is hilarious.
And the thing is, she looks 12, but she acts 8, so let's just assume Clara's, like, 8.
Yeah. So Jess is getting into a feud with her. And basically when it comes out that it's like, oh, well, if Jess isn't going to go, I guess I'll go with Dean and Clara. Then Jess is like, okay, fine, I'm going. What are you talking about? Sure, let's go. And the four of them go to the festival together, which is definitely not going to be awkward. So it's awkward the whole time, where Clara's being really buddy-buddy with Rory and kind of taking great pleasure in annoying Jess, and Jess is being really mouthy with her and everything. And
Dean is being gallant and getting everyone snow cones.
Yeah, Dean's being real gallant and nice.
Except Jess.
Yeah, and he's just like acting like it's just the three of them and Jess isn't there. And it's just, it's really awkward. And so at one point, Jess and Rory are alone. He's just like, so you're just buddy-buddy with Dean now? And she's like, yeah, we talked and we want to be friends. Is that okay?
But the thing is, she says, no, we just randomly saw each other. And he has to kind of needle her a little bit to get her to say, yeah, I guess we met for coffee. And he asked if we could be friends and I wanted to be nice. Like, she is not forthcoming with it. And you could read it from the perspective of she knows how Jess feels about Dean and doesn't want to make him angry. Or that she doesn't want Jess to think she and Dean are back together. Either one could be a reason she's hiding it.
Yeah, but either way, you know, eventually the truth comes out and she's worried Jess is going to be mad. And he says, like, I'm not mad. I just wish you'd told me. Like, you can be friends with Dean. I just don't like that you hid it from me.
Yeah, which
I don't totally believe him, but it's also fair.
The way he said it, he doesn't mean it, but at the same time, what he's saying is absolutely fair.
Absolutely. So then there's a scene where Dean is just like, Dean's waiting, because Clara's in the bathroom, so Dean's kind of perusing around whatever part of the school is open while he's waiting for Clara to come out of the bathroom, and Jess comes out and basically confronts him, and is like, hey, I know what you're doing, and it's not going to work. And Dean's like, look, it's more Jared Padalecki trying to be a bad boy. He's like, look, Rory and I are just friends. Just like Rory and you were just friends. And look how well that worked for you. And it's like, God damn it, Jared Padalecki. He's acting like a soap opera villain, and it just doesn't work. So, like, we get reminded that, like, Evil Dean is still in the picture here, right?
Friends.
Yeah. I know! Straight out of a telenovela, right? Yeah, we get reminded that Evil Dean is here, right? In case you forgot from when we first saw Evil Dean last episode. And I'm just, I can't take Evil Dean seriously, I'm sorry.
Evil Dean is so cute.
So the episode...
But not in the attractive way.
No, but in the... So the episode ends with Rory and Lorelai sitting on the porch while it's snowing, and they're talking, and Rory's like, yeah, it went really well, and Dean and I are friends, and Jess and I are dating, and I really think they're both okay with that. And Lorelai's like, okay. Like, Lorelai's like, oh, you're an idiot child, but okay. Just eat your snow cone. And that's where the episode ends. Also, there was a C-plot, but it was Francie, so nobody cares.
Well, I will summarize it because it's important. Basically, to give it the shortest version possible.
I got it. I can do it.
It is important.
I can do it. I don't believe you because it's Francie, so nobody cares, but I can do it.
I'm not saying anyone will care, but I'm saying it will have fallout.
Yeah, so Paris is still dating To Catch a Predator. And
Jamie.
And it's apparently going really well. I'm sorry, you have to show up on screen 3 times until you get a real name. And
yet, I can't call him Android Funny Hat.
I let you call him Android Funny Hat for 2 entire episodes. Anyway, she's still dating this guy, and she visited him over Christmas. By the way, apparently Christmas happened. And it went really well, and he told her that he loved her, and his family, like, adored her, and it was all going great, and she's really happy, and this seems to just kind of made her a little bit out of whack. So the episode opens...
By that, we mean happy.
Which is out of whack for Paris.
It is.
So we open with a classic Terrible Chilton lecture, and she's totally on a different planet, drawing a Christmas tree. And she says, you know what, we don't need to have 2 student council meetings this week, we can just have 1, that's fine. And, Francie shows up, and then I'm just blinded by rage. Francie stages a political coup and holds this meeting without Paris to, undercut the budget for the senior class gift, which was going to be a telescope, to downgrade it to a tree so that they can have prom at the nice building.
Which I support.
And so, yeah. And so then Rory, after them, like, Rory is forced to let them hold a vote, and everybody votes for it, so Paris gets political cooed while she's not even around. And so then Rory confronts Francie in the bathroom again, and is basically like, I am tired of being your go-between, I'm sick of it, I'm not doing it anymore, and you can consider me your enemy now, which would have been really shocking if Rory being the go-between had existed in more than one other episode.
Yeah.
And nobody cares. That was the C-plot. That's what happened this week on Gilmore Girls. What did you think of this week's episode of Dragon Ball Z Kai?
You know, this week had some good humor. I actually really liked Gohan trying to fly between Yajirobe and Bulma. It had some, like, it had Piccolo, which I'm always happy with, but I am unhappy with just how Vegeta has backslid as a character.
Mm-hmm.
Because basically all he did this episode was yell about how he is the greatest Saiyan and how a peasant like Kakarot isn't going to take his kills and he is the strongest Saiyan. Like, he even had an internal monologue that started with, I am Prince Vegeta of the proud Saiyan race. And then he went on from there, and it's like,
you have I like to think that's just Vegeta's internal monologue on loop all day, every day.
What? I am Prince Vegeta, like, proper ruler of the proud Saiyan race, and I am about to eat this ham on rye.
Yes.
Like...
Much, much faster than that peasant Kakarot ever could.
It's just like, great, we're back to where we were a season ago. Cool,
See,
thanks.
I think you're giving Vegeta a little too much credit for how much he's grown as a character. I think that fundamentally Vegeta being wrapped up in his own pride and convinced that he is the prince of all Saiyans and nobody can defeat him is still pretty par for the course.
No, that's fair, and that is true, but, like, and him seeing himself primarily through his rivalry with Goku is still where he is, but it was just all blind yelling. This episode was just, like, Vegeta heard there was an amp that could go to 11. He had not previously realized this, so why not go there? Like, all this episode, he was yelling about how everyone is a fool and weak, but not in a fun anime way. Like, I mean, him shouting that a baby is, like, his baby is weak and deserves to die.
That was good.
Should be hilarious. It should be, but it was just like, oh, we're here again. Okay, cool, Vegeta.
I like that.
Why should
I care? They're both weak. I think for me it worked because Trunks is there to bounce it off of.
Yeah.
If it was just the same usual garbage of Vegeta being like, I am the prince of all Saiyans, and just like screaming at Goku, like, I shall defeat you, Kakarot, then yeah, that would be a little old. But I think that in the context of Trunks trying to grapple with the fact that this is actually his father, and he's probably had an image of who his father is in his head his entire life, and it is probably a little bit different than this, even though he's been told his father wasn't great.
Yeah.
I think that Trunks being confronted of the image of what Vegeta really is, and also Vegeta, I think even though on the surface it was just a lot of posturing like it usually is, I think under the surface it is kind of him trying to grapple with the fact that he has a son, and he can see that his son, despite being born from a relationship he probably doesn't feel too great about and being half Saiyan, right, his son will still grow up to be a strong warrior. His son defeated Frieza in, yeah, like, in 0 seconds flat, right? I think that Vegeta's dealing with a lot of stuff on the, underneath right now, and that's not going to be evident for a while, but by the end of this arc, I think it will be evident that, that there's a lot going on in there that we're not necessarily seeing right
now. Well, and that's fair, but the thing is, like, I can't give you credit for what you're not telling me. Like, yeah, great, 10 episodes down the line, it's going to end up with some cool character development. I'm excited for that, but now you have to lay the groundwork and, like, you know how they say that a good essay, you tell someone what you're going to tell them, you tell them, and then you tell them what you told them?
Mm-hmm.
I want you to tell me what you're going to be doing. Like, instead of being some interesting character work, and I see what you're saying, and with that context, it's more interesting, it felt like when kids make parody videos, because whenever a kid makes a parody video of some pop culture thing, maybe I'm just going off of what I did, you know the quotes that people say, but you don't know why it's funny.
Mm-hmm.
I know your students really thought the John Cena thing was funny and would just play it whenever, but they didn't get any of the cultural nuance of when you use the John Cena meme. I think for me, it was like making jokes about the cat in The Godfather without understanding anything about The Godfather. And so it just comes off as loud and imprecise.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of being interesting or funny. And I think that the depth that I've come to ask Dragon Ball for was missing in this episode. But the depth that I've asked, like, I want to ask out of Vegeta was missing. And that was disappointing.
Yeah, Trunks got more depth in his relationship with Vegeta. And Vegeta was playing very broad this episode.
But because he was playing so broad, it was harder to pay attention to what Trunks was doing.
Yeah, I can see that.
It overshadowed Trunks when Trunks should have, like, I see what they were doing with Trunks, but I only see it now in retrospect because I was so distracted by Vegeta.
Mm-hmm.
Grant, what did you think of this week's Gilmore Girls?
This episode of Gilmore Girls was pretty good. I liked the Rory plot overall. I really liked Clara annoying Jess. That was gold.
That was gold.
And in general, like, I like Rory and Dean as friends.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I like that dynamic, and I'm interested in that.
You wish you could actually get that?
Yeah, which is why I'm a little disappointed that apparently we're doing a whole, like, Evil Dean arc, apparently. Because I can't take Evil Dean seriously, and it seems a little silly that he's like, I'm gonna win Rory back, when he's the one who broke up with her. And, like, I get he broke up with her because he knew
that he'd lost her,
right? Like, I get that it was a little more complicated than that, but it just feels weird. It kind of feels like a backslide for Dean's character,
mm-hmm,
where him breaking up with her at the dance marathon felt like a big turning over a new leaf for Dean of, I'm not going to do this anymore. Screw this. The situation's messed up. I'm outie. And leaving. I thought that was a big step for him. And so now him immediately turning back around and being like, okay, but that was actually a feint, so I can win her back.
Yeah.
Was like, oh, so you didn't actually learn anything from the situation. Cool. So I don't know. I liked parts of it, but I liked the Rory plot in this episode in isolation, but I don't like where the arc is going.
Yeah.
I'm over this love triangle. I'm beyond over this love triangle. And this is possibly the dumbest take that this love triangle could take of, like, no, now Dean is the conniving villain.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care about evil Dean.
No, it's frustrating that Jess doesn't get time as a boyfriend to have his own problem. Like, because, I mean, the thing is, we see in this episode, he's not the best boyfriend in the world. Like,
no, he just wants to make out all the time and not actually do anything with her.
Yeah. And so we don't get to see their relationship by itself really that much.
At least not so far.
Not so far, and honestly, the season is half over, and
almost, yeah.
Yeah, and she's about to go off to college. Like, this is, spoiler alert, this is a relationship that will not last into college. And so, like, so little time is actually spent on what their relationship looks like that it's frustrating.
That is really frustrating, because I want to see what their relationship looks like, because we've seen some moments where you can see that they could be really good for each other. And so, like, Jess is kind of backslid, just being like, doing stuff is too mainstream. I'd rather go wear a leather jacket behind the gym, right?
Want to make out.
And then, like, Dean has just turned into this weird, out-of-character soap opera villain.
Testosterone monster.
Yeah, and he's always kind of been a testosterone monster, but in a different way.
Yeah.
Right? And I don't know. It's just, like, him literally confronting Jess in, like, in a dark room and being, like, sarcastic of, like, I'm just friends like you were just friends, and that worked out great for you. It was all very much like, I have the nice guy mask, but underneath, right? So
I'm an incompetent high schooler.
Yeah, so that was a little frustrating. I really like the Lorelai plot. Yeah. Emily losing her shit is always funny, and there was a lot of good comedy of, like, Trix checking out the house and everyone following right behind her, which I wasn't entirely clear on what the point of them all following right behind her was, but it was funny. And I look forward to more of that dynamic if she's going to be around for at least a little bit. Then just more of that side of Emily is always good, because I like when Emily isn't in control of the situation. We get some good comedy out of Kelly Bishop when Emily is not on top of things.
Yeah.
When she so usually is. And that was great. Yeah, so yeah, overall, I like this episode. The Francie plot was really fucking dumb, as usual.
Yeah.
But it took up so little of the episode that it didn't taint the rest of what was going on. What questions do you have for me about Dragon Ball?
I only have one, really. What did Trunks think was going to happen? Because in this episode, he had a sentence like, my muddling with the past is changing things. And it's like, yeah, that's why you time traveled to the past to tell everyone what was going to happen, to try to change things. What did he think was going to happen when he time-traveled to the past to change things?
Well, see, he time-traveled to the past to change things, and the expected change was Goku will be around and everybody will be stronger so that together we will beat the androids.
Right.
Right? I don't think that with the information he had, I don't think he could have guessed that the outcome would be two new androids he never heard of are going to appear, and then Goku's heart virus will be staved off for another, like, year and a half so that he only starts to succumb to it now, so they still don't have Goku. And there were two other androids. Like, things are playing out very differently than he would have suspected, and in ways that he could not have predicted based on the things that he changed and the information that he had.
Yeah, but doesn't, like, shouldn't you just assume that when you time travel, weird crap's gonna happen?
Yeah, but he was trying to do this in a measured way, and there were unforeseen circumstances, so I can see him being surprised.
Trunks is a time travel idiot.
Trunks is a time travel idiot. We will go into that later.
Okay, that's all I got. You got any? You have some feelings, I heard? Actually, if you have feelings on Francie, some of them can be saved to next episode. I know! Aren't you excited?
No, I'm not. I don't think I even have the energy to talk about Francie right now. It was just really dumb. Her political coup was getting a better prom.
And really, like, honestly, I know that the point for Francie is the bigger game of, like, bringing, like, having more power than Paris. Like, you can kind of see this as a rivalry, similar to, it's like Yamcha taking on Vegeta.
Kind of, like.
But the thing is, so it's less about what she got than how she did it. But also, I'm 100% with Francie that a better prom is more meaningful than getting a school a telescope.
Something that'll actually better the education of students?
No. This is children. It will not better no one's education. I had girls donate computers to my 7th grade English class. We never used them once. I don't think children's going to change how they do their schooling to actually incorporate this telescope into their curriculum. Like, well, it's not going to do anything.
When you put it that way, that makes sense. But also at the same time, her great political coup being getting a better prom is fucking stupid.
Oh, it is.
And also when Rory confronts her in the bathroom, it's like, oh, you know, I know what your goal's been all years, to take Paris down. And Francie doesn't deny it, and so it's like, okay, then what's the point of taking Paris down? And I know there's going to be more, and so it might reveal a greater long game.
No.
But, no, exactly. Like, her goal is to take Paris down. Why? Eh. And it's... in isolation, okay, whatever, it's a kind of dumb episode plot that's shown up in a couple episodes. Whatever, I can live with it. But we got a snippet of what's been happening in Paris's life while we haven't been paying attention to her. Paris is doing interesting things that are evolving her as a character and are things that I want to see. And that would
Paris
make for...
has the spirit of Christmas in her heart now.
Like, there are things that would be interesting to see and bring up a good drama and probably have good humor of Paris still being a weird Martian who doesn't know how to interact with people.
But she's experiencing a happy family for the first time.
Yes, there's good Paris content here, and in true Gilmore Girls fashion, I get about 25% of it, and the rest of it is left off camera, and I never get to see it, and I am infuriated.
Well, and you're gonna get madder, because if you notice, there's one important thing that doesn't happen in this episode. Rory tells Francie that she's her enemy now, but doesn't tell Paris about this meeting and say, by the way, I'm enemies with Francie now.
Yeah, just like,
You woke up the cat.
Like, there's good Paris content here. Paris is a good character. Paris is arguably one of the better characters on the show, at least in terms of potential to grow and change and be interesting and amusing and fun to watch. And she's, for three seasons now, she's just been sitting there on the shelf, barely used, and I'm so angry. It is just so utterly infuriating. Francie is taking up time that could be used for literally any other plot involving Paris. But I'm sure I'll have a lot to talk about that, because I saw from the Netflix synopsis of next week that we're not done with Francie.
No, we're not done with Francie.
And I'm just gonna need to make my peace with that.
Yep.
Do you know who you want to swap this week?
I think I want to swap Dean and Vegeta.
Okay.
Since they both got turned up to 11 this week, I want... I, Vegeta, Prince of all Saiyans, will not let you take my girlfriend as you did, peasant. You burger flipper, you worm among men. I have the power to take the heart of this peasant woman who I don't know why you want, except that you have it, Kakarot. And that's what I want.
That's what you want? Yeah, okay.
Meanwhile, Dean just trying to intimidate Trunks or Android 20 or anyone with his, oh, you think you're a great android? Well, I'm a better android. Yeah. Clara, come on.
So I have a similar but different. I actually want to do it differently. I want to swap Clara and Trunks.
Big Trunks, little Trunks.
Big Trunks.
Big Trunks.
Because I want Clara to be following Vegeta, being like, hey, do you like your name? Of course, but given to me by my father. What was his name? Vegeta. Well, that's weird.
Where was he from?
Where was he from? We grew up on planet Vegeta. So your dad and your planet and you all have the same name? Yeah, that's dumb. No, it's not. It's Saiyan tradition.
You should be named Frank.
Yeah, like, would you rather be called, like, yeah, like, Frank? No. Or Bob? No. Hey, do you wash your hair? What? Of course I do. It's proper Saiyan hygiene. Well, how do you stay up like that? And just, like, hey, the android got away. You missed him. He's not here either. He's not there either. Why don't you look over here? Oh, no, he's not there either. You're really bad at finding androids, you know? Why don't you just, like, look for him? And just Vegeta getting more and more enraged that, like, a 10-year-old, 8-year-old, whatever year old Clara is supposed to be, because you're right, she acts younger than she looks. Just whatever age this girl is supposed to be, just following him around and driving him insane.
Yeah.
Because I feel like Vegeta is still, like you said, is still an angry, violent man. But I think he has grown past the point where he's not going to smack a child anymore, right? So I think that he would just be forced to put up with it. And then at the same time, Trunks gets to go to a carnival.
They don't have those in the post-apocalyptic future.
No, he gets to go to a carnival and, like, eat snow cones.
And hit a hole through the back of the, like,
bottle toss. Destroy the bottle toss station. And I think this would be just as annoying to Jess, a teenager who's the same age as him having the same childlike wonder, like, wow, a snow cone. Dean, can you buy me a snow cone? Yeah, I can get you a snow cone, Trunks. And for Rory, too? Yeah, totally. And just, like, Trunks would let out his inner 8-year-old having fun at a carnival. Yeah, so that's what I want to swap.
Okay.
And with that, I believe that's Gilmore Ball Z for this week. So, thank you all for listening. We'd love to hear from you on Facebook, Gilmore Ball Z. Our email is gilmoreballz@gmail.com. Our WordPress is gilmoreballz.wordpress.com. And our Twitter is @GilmoreBallZ. We also have a subreddit, which is rGilmoreBallZ. Please drop us a rating on iTunes, Stitcher, Facebook, anywhere you get your podcasts. If we're not on your podcast player of choice, let us know. We'll see what we can do. With that, that's Gilmore Ball Z for this week, and we will see you next Saturday. So, where is Dr. Giroux's lab? What else did Rory win at the Winter Carnival? And how long until Emily snaps and murders Trix in her sleep? Find out next time on Gilmore Ball Z.